So, multivoxel pattern analysis is a way of analyzing functional MRI data, which is data about the brain. And it's really just kind of one of those niche words that comes up in a field that is really just another way of describing multivariate analysis or machine learning, but it's one that's come about in the neuroimaging community, functional neuroimaging. So this is just a very brief, simple overview of what fMRI is. You'd have someone laying in the scanner here, and in this particular case, they're either have their eyes open or their eyes closed. This is a very simple paradigm. And down here at the bottom is showing you when their eyes are open, the fMRI signal is going up, and when their eyes are closed, it goes down, and so on, in this kind of block design, a very simple design. And then on the far right, upper right here, that's the activity you're seeing, which is concentrated in the visual cortex because when light comes in, and the visual cortex is most active when your eyes are open there. So that's what we're doing with fMRI. It's a way of looking at brain activity, neural activity in the brain. And what we really are measuring is the blood flow response that occurs just after there's an increase in neural activity. And the traditional way of analyzing this data, the way that was analyzed in that previous slide, is called the mass univariate approach. So basically, you take every single voxel in the brain, so about 50,000, or depending on your resolution, and you analyze them one at a time using a general linear model. So you could use LM and R. And the dependent variable is just this amount of bold activity, the blood oxygenation response at that voxel, and it's a time series. And your independent variables are the experimental conditions. So whether the eyes are open, the eyes are closed, or whatever you're presenting the subject. It could be pictures of faces, it could be a cognitive task. Whatever you could present to your subject, that could be your experimental design. And then might have nuisance covariates, like how much the person's head moved, or things like physiological signals that aren't interesting to you. This is the hemodynamic response function. So at time zero, this is where the neural activity would happen. That would happen in a few hundred milliseconds. It'd spike. And then the actual response you measure is evolving slowly, and it peaks around 6 seconds, and it has this sort of complicated undershoot pattern. And so this is the thing we actually have to model. It's a slight complication. But if we can model this thing appropriately, and it pretty much looks like this shape, if we can do that, then we can get nice estimates of activity in the brain. And again, this is sort of the processing pipeline for the standard approach. You'd get your raw images, you'd smooth it a little bit, you'd have your design matrix, you'd run a linear model for every voxel in the brain, and then at the end, you get these beautiful technicolor activation maps. And if you have multiple subjects down at the bottom, you could normalize them by warping every person's brain to a standard template and then do statistics on multiple subjects. Okay, so that's the standard approach since 1995 or whatever. And the last, say, decade, and really ramping up more the last few years, people have moved on to this multivoxel approach. But here's the sort of some of the drawbacks of what I just described. So it ignores correlation between voxels, just looks at one voxel at a time. Cannot capitalize on pooling over voxels. Let's say there's more information on a set of voxels than there is on any of the other ones considered independently. Can't take advantage of that. Massive multiple comparisons problem, right? You have 50,000 statistical tests, you have a problem. And very creative ways to deal with this, but it's still a problem. And of course, we know that the brain is representing things in distributed codes, and it just can't, if you look at things one at a time, you can't capture that, right? So this is the drawback of the univariate approach. Now, this is the overview of the multivoxel approach. This is a paper from Ken Norman, 2006, didn't pop up there. But this is multivoxel pattern now. So at the top, this is the idea. You have your stimuli. In this case, it's something stupid, a bottle and a shoe. And the idea is we're going to show people bottles and shoes and see if we can predict, given the brain activity, whether the person was looking at a bottle or a shoe. So you're just flipping things. Instead of modeling the activity, we're taking the model to predict what the person was doing. And so you take your voxels over here on the right, and then you have your different runs. So in fMRI, you have a set of scans, a contiguous time block where a person scanned, and then there's a break, and then they do it again. And so you have many repetitions of the same trial. So you'd show a person many bottles and many shoes, and then you'd have this break. It's just a natural break. So this forms perfect sort of cross-validation blocks. So you'd take your training sets, run one and two, and then try and predict on run three, and so on. And for the other two blocks, you just do internal cross-validation. And down at the bottom, it's just showing the standard sort of support vector machine trying to find a plane separating the shoes and the bottles. Okay, so this is the overview of MVPA, and this is a huge thing, and it's sort of revolutionized functional neuroimaging. So to what's the purpose? Why do we want to do this? So we can map the representational code of a stimulus class, right? So we can say, what is the representation in the brain of a bottle or a shoe, rather than just looking at regions of activity. We can decode and predict cognitive states related to attention, perception, and memory. This is, you can think of ways in which this would be very powerful. For instance, there's someone, Adrian Owen, used this kind of method to detect patients who were minimally conscious and could not respond by asking them to imagine themselves playing tennis or imagine themselves walking through the room. He could detect that they were actually imagining themselves playing tennis or imagining themselves walking through a room, and therefore determined they were in fact probably conscious. You can use it to classify and predict disease states such as Alzheimer's, schizophrenia, etc. And I know there's another talk about classifying murderers. Potentially, you could use this kind of technique to classify murders, right? If there's something in the fMRI signal that would tell you about whether someone has violent propensity, you might be able to classify this kind of thing. So there's greater sensitivity for a multivariate approach. So now the univariate approach has maximal resolution because you're just looking at one single voxel. So you can't do better in terms of spatial resolution than the univariate approach. However, MVPA, you trade a little bit of localization for huge increase in sensitivity, inferential power, but you have to decide on a spatial scale ahead of time, which can be complicated. And you know, do you want 10 voxels, a tiny area, a bigger area, 1,000 voxels, or you want to just put the whole brain into a machine learning algorithm? And this depends on the type of question you have. So one very clever technique that's used a lot is called the multivariate searchlight approach. And this kind of gets at the best of both worlds. If you don't want to give up some of your resolution, you can use this approach. And you basically take, say, something like a 10 millimeter radius and move it around the brain and do a support vector machine within each 10 millimeter radius in the brain. So then you do 50,000 support vector machines, and then you'd map the accuracy or some measure of accuracy of the learner at each voxel in the brain. That would give you a map that would look a little bit like the maps I showed previously. Here's another approach. You use anatomical ROIs that can be defined in a variety of ways, and you run your machine learning classifier inside each ROI, and then you can plot the results within each ROI, which is a similar approach. Effectively, but you can have, it allows you a little bit more of an a priori way of defining the particular areas of interest. Now here's a question, why do this in R, since as sometimes is the case, previous tools exist, in this case in MATLAB and Python. I mean, isn't that enough? But as you know, probably somebody thought, if you've invested in R, maybe you want to try some of the things that R brings to the table and see if that can have some benefits. So for instance, R has a very rich set of multivariate and machine learning methods that this will give you access to. And you have this thing, the carrot package, just sort of encapsulates all these methods in a standard interface. So wouldn't that be nice if we could plug in some of the carrot tools for brain imaging? So, you know, so I started writing this package, and it seemed like a good idea at the time. And of course, it's a lot of work to implement these things, but why not? So here's the standard interface you get, for instance, in most machine learning or statistical learning packages in R. You have some function, which you give it a matrix and some labels, and then you estimate, and then you can predict using this interface. This is great, but you need a matrix first. And with brain imaging, you have this four-dimensional array, and it's not exactly a matrix. It has these features, the spatial coordinates. So this isn't quite a rich enough interface to handle the data for fMRI. So, for instance, fMRI is four-dimensional. It's stored in this odd format called Nifty often. We have to have input and output mechanisms for that. And we want to apply learning also to these arbitrary regions within the areas in the brain. And we want it to have to be concise and scriptable. And so we have to use this package that I also developed, the neuroimage package for the data structures, and we can work with that and develop a better interface for MVPA. So the neuroimage package provides these data structures, dense and sparse image structures, and conversions from R matrices back into neuroimaging formats. So here's an example just using NeuroIM. You can load in a mask. That'd be a binary image just saying where's the brain part of the data, not the outside of the brain, but what part of the brain are we want to look at. So you load that in, then you load in the actual fMRI data with load vectors. There's a four-dimensional, so it's kind of a vector of images. And then here's an example just taking that vector and converting it to a matrix using only values where mask is greater than zero. Now you have that X matrix, and then you can plug that in. Now you have your Y labels and plug it into like train or some kind of modeling interface. And here's an example of a searchlight. Do similar things, load in the data, and I create this thing called searchlight. Searchlight equals searchlight, give it the mask and a radius, and then we can iterate through all the voxel sets in the searchlight and run our extract the series of data, the time series, using these voxels, and then use Carrot or whatever to run a machine learning model on that particular subset of data. Okay, and with the package our MVPA ever work at, it just kind of takes that and does all that sort of that for you, essentially. So you load in the data, and then you load in your design, your experimental design, and you create this thing called MVPA data set. You give it the data, the labels, the mask, the cross-validation block structure, and then you load in a Carrot model. So load model, we're going to use shrinkage discriminant analysis. It turns out this works great with fMRI data. And then we run MVPA searchlight. Given those four pieces of information, it runs the model for every single searchlight in the brain and gives you a set of maps giving you the accuracy for the different classes and so on. So this is a convenient way to run MVPA. So here's an example very quickly of something we did in our laboratory. So we're interested in perception and memory. So when you see something complicated, I show you a picture of this is Obama doing at a press conference. And I show you that image, that video, and later I ask you to remember the Obama video. So I have two things. I have you watching the video, and then later you trying to remember the video. And the idea is, can we use machine learning and give it the perceptual brain pattern and see if you can predict what the person was remembering? Okay, so that's the paradigm we're working with here. And we use, and this is an example using the searchlight approach, where we train the models on perception and then try and predict on the memory. And that's up here. And you see all the areas in red are the areas where the searchlight had high accuracy. It was able to predict whether the person was remembering the Obama or the avalanche video. And that's for young at the top and older subjects, people over 65. At the bottom, so their memory is degrading a little bit. You can see it's brighter in the old and the younger group. So this is an example of applying this using R in a real paradigm. And here's an example, just the same thing, but how would you do it with an ROI set? In this case, your mask is no longer just a binary mask. It's a set of integer indices where each different integer represents a different ROI, and you can do this essentially the same thing and just have a machine learning classifier run within each subset of the within each integer index. And this is what you get here. So here's the accuracy scores. This is a different paradigm. We were classifying phonemes, people listening to different like ba, da, and see if we can classify whether you're hearing a ba or a da. And here are the different accuracies for place, voicing, and manner of articulation. But so it works quite well. And then the other thing, last thing we're going to talk about is, you know, not everyone can code. A person comes in as a graduate student and they don't necessarily want to get knee-deep or coding in R. And I wanted to have something where you could just have a configuration file that was perfectly declarative and run MVPA. And it turns out if you just put things in R files and have equal signs, you can fool people into thinking they're not coding. And all of this information that we needed to run the analyses could be quite easily put in a just key value pairs, and you plug it in that way, and then you run this script and it does the same thing. So that was one of the goals of the RMVPA project. And that's pretty much. I want more visualization tools, and the projects are on GitHub if you want to take a look. Yes.
So, can you use your
it's better to convert things into Nifty.
Can you repeat the question? Sorry.
Yes. Can she use the package for DICOM formatted image? That's a medical imaging format. But usually in the neuroimaging community, people don't use DICOM. They just convert it the first thing into Nifty. Because it's generally just a lot easier to work with the Nifty file format than DICOM. So the answer is no. I don't. But there's a package called DICOM something or other that you can use.
Okay. Is there any other questions? Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.